Hello, and welcome to the SearchSecurity.com podcast, Endpoint Controls That Really Do and Don't Work. I'm Kara Gatine. Thanks for joining us. In this fact or fiction podcast, we'll separate the fact from the fiction regarding which enterprise endpoint security controls are and aren't effective, as well as how to use the good ones to their fullest potential, and how to move beyond the ones that might be a waste of time and money. Joining me today is Mike Rossman. Mike is president of Securosis, an independent information security research and consulting firm. Thanks for joining us today, Mike.
Thank you, Kara. Great to be here.
Glad to have you. Before we begin, I want to mention that this podcast is part of a lesson in SearchSecurity.com's Advanced Endpoint Threat Defense School. It's one of many schools that you can visit anytime by navigating to SearchSecurity.com/security school. Mike, to set the stage before we begin, can you give us a brief overview of traditional endpoint protection and explain why the status quo isn't sufficient to deal with today's advanced threats?
Yeah, you bet, Kara. And, you know, I think a lot of it gets back to the history of how we used to detect viruses or malware or whatever you want to call bad stuff that you don't want getting onto your devices. And that was really based upon matching a specific signature. So you'd see a file, you'd know that file was bad, you would block it. Nowadays, the attackers have advanced their techniques to the point where they can really obscure what the malware is doing, which basically takes these signatures out of play. So a lot of the traditional techniques that had been used for the better part of the last decade, oh, and by the way, that are mandated by many of the specific regulatory hierarchies that are in play in security today, really don't work as effectively as they need to nowadays.
Scary new world we're in, Mike. Okay, let's quickly explain how this works for our listeners. I'll read a statement, and Mike, you'll tell me whether that statement should be answered fact or fiction, and then explain why. So let's get started. Here's our first statement. Fact or fiction, application whitelisting is not a problem for end users.
Well, Kara, that's fiction. And, you know, let me just take a second to explain what application whitelisting is. And that's really the concept that you are applying a default deny posture to your devices, which basically just means any application or executable that you want to run on those devices has to be in a whitelist, which is basically an authorized application that can run on the device. The problem is knowledge workers, especially sophisticated knowledge workers, want to use the software that they want to use in order to get their job done. And what application whitelisting does is it creates an impediment to actually letting those folks do their job. So, you know, we say it's fiction, not because it doesn't work. If you really have to lock down a device and you can't afford to have any kind of malware in any way, shape, or form happen on that device, a whitelisting is actually a pretty good option to do that. But the reality is, if you want folks to be productive and have some leeway to do their job, whitelisting is probably going to be problematic from a user experience standpoint.
Okay, let's keep it going, Mike. Fact or fiction, host intrusion prevention systems break more than they fix.
Well, that's actually a fact. And if we get back to the early days of HIPS, or host intrusion prevention, what we saw was really the same kind of model that we used on the network, which was look at what's happening in the network use case. We're actually looking at the packets and you know where they come from and telemetry and all that kind of good stuff. When we apply those disciplines to the host, what we see are a number of different interactions, whether they're registry interactions, whether they're file interactions, whether they're IP stack and or networking interactions. And by managing and monitoring all of those different interactions that happen on the device, you can tend to isolate a number of different attack patterns. And that's really what HIPS was built to take care of. The problem was, it kind of got confused at times, because there were some times where a specific interaction, maybe it was a screen grab as part of an application, actually was legitimate behavior. But since it could be an attack in a different context, the HIPS technology would block or at least send an alert, and it became very problematic. So again, I think that that's fact in terms of the fact that it broke and caused a lot more false positives than it fixed. But what we're seeing is an evolution of the technology, which really allows context to be applied to those rules, which make it a lot more effective to block today's malware on the device.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mike, here's another fact or fiction. The idea of macro virtualization and isolating activity is potentially disruptive.
Micro virtualization, woo, you know, or microvisors, or, you know, all these fancy new terms that technology people and marketing folks come up with basically to confuse everybody. But the reality of the situation is microvisors or micro virtualization is really primed to disrupt how we do a lot of activity on the desktops. And basically the way this concept works is that you have kind of like a, I mean, think about it as really a virtualization layer on your device that isn't really focused just on running Windows or Linux or any other kind of desktop operating system, but really virtualizing the device on a process-by-process basis. So for every application you have, the print driver will spawn a new process to print. Well, that's something that could, again, be virtualized, and by virtualized, what I mean is isolated, which means that it can't get access, so any of those independent micro-virtualized processes can't get access to any of the other data on the device. Because remember, a lot of the malware works by breaking and exploiting a vulnerable piece of software to get control of the entire device, really at the base level kernel and or operating system level within the device. And again, very, very complicated from the standpoint of trying to stop these activities, but by isolating and really building, in effect, a fence around everything that you do on the machine, what you do is you really kind of segment out the activities of the computer a lot more effectively and make it a lot harder for the attackers to take control of the entire device and to steal the data that they want to. So we do see this as disruptive technology, but it has pretty significant hardware requirements, and it's still very early in its evolution. So we're pretty excited, but, you know, again, as excited as I get means maybe in, you know, 3 to 5 years, we'll have a true disruption.
The terms and acronyms that keep – every week there's a new one, Mike, so – yeah.
You bet.
Potentially,
well, that's your
disruptive
job to keep
indeed.
Up with them, right?
Exactly. All right, Mike, here's our last fact or fiction. Performing endpoint hygiene like patching, configuration management, and device control eliminates low-hanging fruit for the attackers.
Yeah, Kara. That's really one of the things that we tend to forget. And remember, Search Security School, our Tech Target School on advanced endpoint threat detection, you know, we're starting to throw this word advanced into everything, right? Because, we don't want to be not advanced, right? Because, unsophisticated script kiddie stuff. You know, anybody with Metasploit can do these kind of things. That's not interesting. The fact of the matter is, if you look at any of the breach reports or you look at any of the research that's out there in the public domain, it indicates that still a vast majority of the compromises and the attacks that we see are based upon vulnerabilities and or exploits that have been around for a while. So if we get better at the blocking and tackling, again, things like you mentioned, patching, configuration management, controlling, you know, what these devices can do, can they, you know, put in portable storage, you know, can they use specific print drivers? By more effectively managing the hygiene of these devices, we really do make it harder for the attackers to break in. And, you know, the thing about advanced attackers that we kind of chuckle about is everybody thinks they're using zero-day attacks all the time. Oh, you know, they're doing cutting-edge research and they've got all, you know, these different techniques to break things. So, by the way, they do, but they only use them if they have to, right? If you leave the front door open, they're not going to climb on your roof and come down your chimney like Santa Claus, right? They're not going to do that, right? You left the front door open for them. So they have sophistication. Mm-hmm. They have the kinds of technologies that can, in an advanced way, break your defenses, but they'll only use them if they have to. So, again, that's why we tend to continue to work with organizations to help them understand that, you know, you're all fixed up and you're all bent over an axle around, you know, kind of all of these advanced techniques, and you still do a pretty crappy job at patch and configuration management, right? So fix that, and then you're in a much better position to really defend against some of these advanced things.
Right. Great advice, and something that every security professional needs to keep in mind. Okay, Mike, as we wrap things up, can you explain why an enterprise needs a layered security model, please?
Yeah, sure. You know, and again, it's funny. I'm kind of old, right? I have a whole mess of gray hair, and I've been doing this. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've been able to be lucky to be in a position as an analyst to really watch the cycles, you know, kind of come around, and what's old is new again. And you know, I keep thinking, haven't I seen this movie before? You know, sure, it was 10 years ago, it was 12 years ago, and we keep seeing the same kind of patterns over and over again. And everyone's saying, oh, you know, we got to give up. The advanced guys are too good. No, you know, we got to disregard our layered security architecture. No, that's not really the case. It's important, you know, to think about layers as we are designing controls to really deal with this malware epidemic, because the sooner we get rid of stuff that we don't want, the better it is. So if there's some way we can check for malware on the perimeter of our network before it gets in onto our servers, onto our endpoint devices, that's goodness, right? So we want to do some stuff on the network. We want to block what we can. We want to use technologies like reputation. We want to do malware inspection on perimeter devices just so we can get rid of that crap, right? And we're not going to get rid of everything, so we still have to have our defenses in our data center to protect our servers. And obviously that starts with some of the hygiene things I just described before, but also involves making sure that we have proper segmentation in our data centers, that we're terminating connections properly, that we're managing and tracking the telemetry of how traffic's flowing through our networks. And we also have to protect our endpoint devices, especially given the fact that many of them unplug at the end of the day and go home without the protection of the perimeter network there to help them. So, you know, this is one of these things that what's old is new again, and although it's not sexy and although it's not exciting, if you forget about your layers, if you forget about your hygiene, if you forget about, you know, kind of the fundamental blocking and tackling of security that we all learned in security school, you know, 100 years ago, it's not going to end well. So, you know, I always tend to say, before we sit there and start worrying about all of these advanced attacks and zero-day defenses, make sure you do the simple stuff correctly, systematically, and effectively, and then we can start talking about advanced tactics.
All right. Remember the basics and then move forward. Great advice, Mike. What a perfect way to end this Factor Fiction podcast. Mike Rothman, president of Securosis, thank you for joining us. I have to tell you, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, Mike.
Great. Thank you, Kara. And I love participating with you guys in these kind of school events. Hopefully they're helpful to some folks.
I'm sure they definitely are. I mean, especially these short, quick ones. I mean, our listeners really get a lot in just a few minutes. So we do appreciate that. So again, thank you for listening. For more learning materials, be sure to visit our other security lessons at searchsecurity.com/securityschool. I'm Kara Gattin. Have a great day.